Welcome back. This is the last demonstration session. Next week we'll begin the help sessions for the home assignment. So let's get right into it. Hopefully it is showing the screen. Okay, now it should work. So today we have three exercises, and we're basically studying the basics of the non-linear modeling. And the first exercise, it's about examining the non-linearities using interaction terms. So we're using the currencies data. Three different currencies, euro, British pound, and Japanese yen per US$1. And our data range is almost 20 years. So overall, we're beginning doing a ARMA modeling. So that's a linear model, but we're using nonlinear, we're using interaction terms in order to capture the non-linearities in the underlying process. First of all, let's load the libraries needed. Once again, to highlight, use it's shift plus arrows and run a command control plus enter. So let's load the data, and that's the length of the data. This is the log transformations of the currencies. And then let's make them into time series. And then difference. Let's take the first difference. So question number one, it was about the stationarity of the model. So let's first have a look what our series looked like. So these are our currencies in levels. So here, blue line is euro per US$, red line, one British pound per US$, and then the green line, Japanese yen per US$. So here, the euro and pound are scales. Left-hand axis is their scale, and for the Japanese yen, it's the right-hand side. So overall, when the Japanese yen, for example, is drifting downwards, it is appreciating against US dollars. And then when the same also holds for the euro and British pound, when they're drifting downwards, they're appreciating against dollars, and when they're drifting upwards, they're depreciating. So overall, we see a trend that pound and euro appreciate against US dollar against around 2008, and then they have been depreciating, appreciating, depreciating. And the same holds also with respect to Japanese yen. It has overall appreciated until about 2013, and after that, depreciating. 2013, the late Japanese ex-prime minister Shinzo Abe announced his three arrows, and there will basically central bank doing quantitative easing and keeping the rates low. So after that, the Japanese yen has depreciated. And today it is around in 150. So during the last couple of years, it has depreciated even more. So this is about the stationarity of the series. So overall, these series look like they're drifting. There's a stochastic trend in each series, but let's test whether that's really the case. So that's done by unit group test. So in the first case, it is about the euro. Our test statistic is here. And then we compare it to the critical values. It's a little bit over 10%, but below the percent of 5%. So given that the test statistic is lower than the critical value, the null stays in power, that means we have a unit root. What about the British pound? The result is the same. The statistic is lower than the critical values. There, the null stays in power, and that implies a unit root. And the same also applies to the Japanese yen. It also, the statistic is lower than the critical values. The null stays in power, implying a unit root. So instead of looking levels like we just did, let's look at the differences, relative changes of the log series. And here it's your euro bound and yen changes in them. So relative change, it is short. Now our perspective is in a short run. Earlier it was in the long run. So these are the short-term changes in the series we just looked earlier. So here we can see that each of these series are oscillating around the zero, meaning that they have a stable mean. That's one sign of the stationarity. Nevertheless, we see each of these series, the variability changes over time in each of these series, meaning that it is not constant. Then, for example, here, 2008, there's this crisis period, and the volatility becomes higher. And here, in the case of the British pound, here, there's a huge outlier here that's related to the Brexit. When the referendum went through, it was a huge shock to the financial markets. And then there seems to be a lot of outlier events in the Japanese yen. The scaling of the euro is euro has smaller k scaling than the pound and Japanese yen. Nevertheless, let's check whether these changes are stationary or not. So this is the changes in the euro. The statistic is almost 50, so way higher than the critical values. When the null is not staying in power, this means a state. This is a we reject the unit root. What about bound? Also the same. We reject the unit root. The series is stationary. And the same also holds the Japanese yen. The series are stationary. Then in a B bar, we were asked to find a ARMA representation for these models. And we're doing this to the stationary series, so we're using returns. So this is the same thing we did. I believe it was during the second demonstration session where we studied the ARMA modeling. Yeah, it was the second demonstration session. So we're doing the same here. So we've just decided, we assume that the Schwarz is the right Schwarz criteria is the right information criteria, and let's check what's the possible orders of this process. So in the first case, according to the information criteria, The series has, it is Arma 00 series. So in other words, this series should be white noise. And the same, actually, we get the same result also for the British bound. According to this information criteria, it should be 00 model, or in other words, white noise. And the same hold also to the Japanese yen. It should be 00, that is white noise. So white noise means it has a constant mean and constant variance. So here we have a minor contradiction. This was the according to statistical test, we got this result applying certain modeling assumptions. But when we look at this graph on the right-hand side, for sure we can see that there's a lot of the variability is not constant. So in other words, the results of these statistical tests are not quite credible. We did so. In other words, there's something else going on than what we assumed in these statistical tests we earlier did. So let's try to figure out what's going on. So first of all, let's just try different AR models and see how the results change. So for example, let's just assume that the underlying process is AR1, check the results, and then let's then compare it to the AR5 model. So first of all, we see that neither of these coefficient is statistically significant, and how to see that, how to calculate that when the p-value is not given directly, just take the estimated value and divide it by the standard errors of the parameters. And if this ratio is higher than 2 or 1.96, the coefficient is statistically significant at the 5% level. So here, for sure, that doesn't hold. So nothing is in AR1 model, nothing is statistically significant there. And the same seems to also hold in the case of the AR1 model. Good sign here is that when we added some additional lags, the estimation of the AR1 parameter did not change much. So there's some robustness in the estimation of the AR1 coefficient. Intercept term is basically zero, so that's not relevant in any way. So in the case of the euro relative changes, we did not found anything. How about the British pound? AR1 and AR5. Here again, parameter estimates stay relatively the same. That's a good sign, but nevertheless, I believe this is far from statistical significance. So yeah, this is the AR1 parameter seems to be statistically significant at the 5% level, as this test statistic is higher than the critical value at the 10% level. That's 165. And nothing's there, and nothing else there. What about Japanese yen? That's AR1 and AR5. The estimation are robust, but here this is the first time we find some statistical significance, some persistence. So here take the value divided by the standard errors, and this is way higher than 2. It's actually statistically significant. Well, that's almost at the 1% level. If I remember correctly, it's 265 is the right value. It is just above the 1% level. So overall, this simple exercise showed that there's some persistence in the Japanese yen, but But we shouldn't read too much into it because our modeling assumptions are likely too restrict. That is too maybe let's try to maybe we should try to loosen up our assumptions a little bit and try to find something there. Nevertheless, there seems to be some persistence in the Japanese yen. We just do not know whether it's coming from the series itself or from some other factor. Okay, in the C part, we are introducing dummy variables. In the next part, let's control to some outliers in this series to see whether the presence of these outliers are dominating the calculation method estimation we applied earlier. So, for example, here, these are the economic. So, basically, what we've done here. Just take the maximum value of the absolute of the series, for example, the euro returns, and the value is four and something as its absolute value. It seems to be this outlier event there. And then let's take the Brexit from the bound series, and the case of Japanese yen, let's take that outlier. Let's control those outliers and see whether controlling them affects the results. So those are the dates for these outlier events. And then let's run the estimations again. So in the first case, this is the AR1 model we estimated earlier without the intercept that was not relevant. And then the second one is second in the second model, it's the AR1 model, but we're controlling the outlier in the euro changes. First model is like earlier. Here, we control the outlier parameter value. Okay. Did this zoom just break down a moment ago? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Yes, sir, it did break down.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but it did.
Yeah, so show me, please show me where I was earlier. So did you catch that I talk about this control running these terms? Did you see that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that was then it was just a abrupt some up, some something abrupt just happened. So I'll just continue and will not go backwards. So what we did what have we done here? We built these dummy terms that I'll have to check that, yeah, the recording is working great. So we created these dummy variables and controlled the most extreme events in this series. And then we estimated the AR1 model without the dummy term, and then the AR1 model with this dummy term controlling the extreme events. So here, the parameters are around the same. That's great. But yeah, here that's the value of the value of the euro out most extreme outlier. So here, this implies. So this implies a depreciation, sudden depreciation of the euro. So when we look at this parameter value, it's actually just about the same as the most extreme event in the series. No, it's exactly the same. So it's controlling that in the estimation, but nothing else what changed there. Then let's check the Brexit, British pound and the impact of the Brexit into the estimation. The first model is the AR1 without the dummy variables, and second with this dummy variable controlling the outlier. And here we find a difference. So here, the first model, we did not control the Brexit. And in the second model, we controlled the Brexit. And here we can see that when we are controlling the impact of the Brexit, the parameter value of the AR1 changes. So that means that this outlier event is so extreme that it's dominating the standard OLS estimating correctness of the OLS, the estimation method. So we have to be really aware of this Brexit impact of the Brexit here in the estimation. So that's a note. We have to be aware of the impact of the Brexit in the British pound. And what about the Japanese yen? The first one is the AR1 without the dummy variables, and second with the dummy variables, that's controlling the outlier extreme economic event. And here again, the AR1 coefficient changes. I believe it's still just statistically significant at the 5% level. Yes, it's statistically significant at the 5% level. This value is higher than 1.96. That's the critical value for the 5% level. And this is the extreme outlier there. So there we also found out that the outlier is affecting the estimation procedure. We did a minor change into a model and our result changed. So we have to be careful with that outlier. In the D part, we are asked when these extreme economic events happens, whether they have a permanent change in the underlying process. So how to control that? We'll just set dummy variables as one after this event happens. So you could, in other words, as a COVID-19 pandemic is quite has happened quite recently, just think about it in this way, that something really extreme happens and we want to control everything after that point, not only that during one day, permanent everything after that. The first case in the with the euro, let's see whether the change is permanent. Yes, it seems to have a permanent change earlier. Earlier, this parameter was a little bit smaller. Let's print it there. Earlier model, yes. So interesting. In other words, this is the standard AR1 model, and when we just controlled the outlier as of one day, our results did not change. But when we wanted to check whether this outlier had a permanent effect, that everything after that changes, that's the case. So when after this extreme economic event happens, there's a unit change in the mean value of the series. So when the value is here positive, that means that the euro is depreciating against US dollars. So US dollars is becoming more valuable. I believe earlier the sign was, I'll have to check that one, earlier the sign was negative, so that means that the outlier had a opposite impact. So the opposite impact was that the euro was appreciating suddenly against US dollar. So in other words, when we control the permanent impact of an outlier, the sign switches here. It's in the short run, during one day, it was sudden appreciation of the euro, but on the long run, that means after that date, it was about long run depreciation. Here, one parameter changes, so there's some lack of robustness. Now this AR1 parameter is also statistically significant at the 5% level. Secondly, let's look at the British pound. So here we control. So here at 24th June 2016, Brexit referendum happened. So here we're controlling what's the permanent effect of the Brexit. Let's compare it to the pure AR1 model. So here we see that the AR1 coefficient, there's a change there. So the underlying dynamics is more complex, it changes. And then we see a unit change of after that, meaning that that after the Brexit, the British pound has depreciated against US dollar. And what about the Japanese yen? Okay, here. After the permanent change in the Japanese yen, it has depreciated against US dollar. So here, changes in Japanese yen, G7 yen. I'll check that one from the notes here. So in October 2008, G7 group, large industrial countries singled out Japanese yen and warned about possible currency, possible volatility in the currencies market. So after that was the most extreme economic event, and after that, the Japanese yen has depreciated against US dollar. And again, here the Japanese, here, also here, the AR1 is statistically significant like it was earlier. So in the D part, we assumed that the when in our model, we assumed that when extreme economic event happened, it had a external change in the series. So in the E part, we're modeling the shock a little bit differently. So we're changing this. So we're not assuming shock no longer outside from the model, but we're endogenizing the shock, meaning that it's coming, the process is coming inside from the model. There's something on the jack. Significant, I was asked, will we check the significance of each model too? So I'm not, I'm do you mean by statistical significance here? Oh, statistics. So, so if I forgot to say something about statistical significance, I try to correct this also. So, how to calculate the statistical significance? Just take the parameter and divide it by the standard errors. And if the ratio of them is around two or above, it's a sign that parameter is statistically significant at the 5% level. So I'll try to remember do that in future. So here in the E part, we're endogenizing the shock. So let's look at the instructions. So we're asked to analyze whether the Japanese yen against US dollars reacts against the median value of a British pound to euro returns. So first of all, we have to construct the pound euro series, and let's do that. So here in what this line does, we apply the following formula. That's British pound per 1 euro is by definition here British pound per US dollar times, when we take the inverse of the euro, it's euro times US dollars per 1 euro, or in other words, these two parts cancel each other out. So this way we get the pound per 1 euro. So let's calculate that, and then let's plot the series. So this is British pound against 1 euro. So when the series is drifting upwards, it's a sign that euro is appreciating, and downwards, it's about euro depreciate. Excuse me. Actually, it's exactly the opposite. So when the series is drifting upwards, that means so when the series is so here, for example, here if the value of this ratio is 1.7, that means you buy one point, you get 1.7 British pound per 1 euro. So when the series is drifting upwards, the euro is appreciating, and when it's drifting downwards, you get less amount of British pound per 1 euro. There seems to be so, but nevertheless, there seems to be some two different regimes here. So, for example, here this seems to be the mean value. The series is drifting, but here the mean value seems to be way higher. There's something happening here, and that's actually the Brexit that has weakened the British pound. So now let's plot. So here, this graph was British pound to euro in levels, and now let's plot in the relative changes. So this is the short run changes in the model. It's nicely oscillating around the mean value. So for sure, it looks like stationary, but there's a lot of variability in the series. These are the quantiles of the series, and the median value is this. Median value is around zero, actually. Yeah, it seems to be the distribution seems to be quite nice. The median value is around zero, and the 40 and 60% are around as far away from the 50%, and the 20 and 80 are also almost as far away from the distribution, so it seems to be quite nicely shaped distribution, but the outliers are something else. So it outliers can cause problems here. So here, now let's construct a new dummy. So here we'll take the bound Euro series and compare it to the medium value that is here. And when the observation in the series is higher than the medium value, our dummy is activated. It becomes one, and when it's lower than the medium value, it is zero. So that is our dummy variable, and let's check the median effect of the bound to Euro. So before doing any more complicated estimations, let's do a standard AR1 model with this new variable we just constructed. So here, on the left-hand side, we are estimating changes in the Japanese yen, and on the right-hand side, we have this euro median impact of the euro bound to euro. So again, when the medium effect is activated, it has a unit impact in the changes in the Japanese yen. But the AR1 parameter is no longer statistically significant, and how to calculate that? Take the value of the parameter and divide it by the standard errors, and this is so the test statistic here is quite small, and it should be over 1.9, should be larger than that value, around 2, to be statistically significant at the 5% level. But there seems to be some unit some impact from the euro bound euro exchange rate to the Japanese yen. It could have some endogenous some impact. And why we're doing it? It was because we wanted to endogenize the shock that's affecting to the Japanese yen. So here, next, let's add the G7 warning as an interaction term to the series and see whether the result changes. Okay, we added this G7 warning in the Japanese yen, and then the euro bound effect, and all of these variables are statistically significant. And here you should be able to see that on your own. If the ratio of this parameter value and the standard error is larger than 2, it's statistically significant at the 5% level. The critical value is 1.96. Unfortunately, this software, this ARIMA modeling here, does not give the p values directly. You have to calculate them. So overall, when we added this control of the G7 warning into Japanese yen, the result implies now that the series has some persistence on its own. Its values from the previous values are affecting it, and then there seems to be some connections, statistically significant connections with the euro bound. But of course, the deeper question here is, where is the persistence coming from? So what's really the underlying data driving problem? What is the process that's driving the data? Well, let's again do some visual examination. So here, the blue line is the bound to euro And then the green line is the Japanese yen to US dollar. So here we can see some inverse correlation, but then this series, there seems to be three different regimes in this series. So for short, until 2008, this series was relatively constant and this was drifting constantly. But then the global financial crisis happened. There's a pound to euro is drifting upwards and yen starts to drift downwards. And then there seems to be some inverse correlation. At least this is quite clear example of the inverse correlation. One is going up and another down, and then they start to drift here. So there seems to be maybe three different economic regimes are here overall. What about the relative changes? So this plot here is this exchange rates in levels. Now let's look at the indifferences, that is the relative changes. And here again, when you compare this outlier events, there seems to be some overlap between them, but then also there this the spikes into this series also seem to not overlap with each other. So just by looking these relative changes, it seems that we have a lot of noise in this series. So most likely the noise, there's so much noise in these exchange rates that that's making the estimations difficult. But nevertheless, we do not let that to bother us, and let's try to continue with our modeling. So next is the question number two. That's the threshold. So again, I was cut suddenly. And now the recording has changed. Okay, now it's recording again. Sorry about these problems. I cannot do much about how why is this lacking so much. But let's continue. So now the second question, it's about threshold AR modeling. So first, let's try TAR model threshold autoregressive model in try to whether we're able to find the data generating process. So here, the first part, let's skip this A part because we have already done the AR5 and AR1 modeling, so let's not do that again. And instead, let's just plot some relations between the lags of this model. So here in each of these plot, the y-axis is the present value t, and the lag against it is plot is on the x-axis. So here we can see there it seems that these models, just by looking at this simple, based on this simple visual plotting, it seems that the models are linear. If there would be a threshold, we would expect there be some kind of curve in a series. So for example, the series would drift like downwards and then it would change its direction and start drifting upwards. So I was asked that the Japanese yen is more volatile compared to the euro. So how can we explain this variation? So That's exactly, you're asking the right question. So that's exactly we're trying to figure out why it is, why is that the case? There for short, there are two. The answer is something between these extremes, but one extreme is it is naturally more volatile. And that is, in other words, more noisy exchange rate, or other extreme is that there is something. So again, I was cut off, and now it's recording again. Sorry about these disruptions. So for short, Japanese yen can be just by its nature more volatile, or there's some economic process that making it more volatile. And we're trying to find whether it's really the economic process that's making it more volatile. So based on this visual plotting, we did not find any non-linearities, any threshold. So in other words, if there would be some kind of threshold, we would find some kind of curve here that this line would drift first downwards and then start to drifting upwards. That's a sign that there would be two different regimes. But let's nevertheless test that whether this is a linear or non-linear process. So here, the null hypothesis is that the process is a AR process. Here, the p-value is way above the 0.05, so the null stays in power. The process is a AR process. What about if we add some additional lags? So in the first case, we only added one lag. Let's now add five lags. And here, the null hypothesis is rejected. So when the null is rejected, we're re rejecting a linear AR process. So in other words, it's more likely that the underlying process, according to this test, is a non-linear process. Then let's do a multiple test so we can check the robustness of our results here. In the first case, we used Keenan's test. Now let's use Tsai's test or F test and test the same thing. The null hypothesis is that the process is a linear AR1. According to the p-value above 0.05, the null stays in power. It is a linear process, but when we add a lags a little bit, the null becomes rejected. So again, Tsai's test gives us the same result as Keenan's test. So which one is the co correct answer? So let's test this based on the Akaiker information criteria. First, on Keenan's test, it chooses according to the Akaike 16. 16 is the optimal number of the lag, and the p-value is rejected. Yeah, and according to Tsai, the result is the same. It chooses 16 as an optimal lag, and when the null is rejected, AR1 process, linear process, is rejected. So more likely non-linear process. So this one here is not relevant as our effective sample is quite large, so we can skip that one. But if your effective sample, if you do not have as many observations as we have used this test. And again, the interpretation is the same. The null is the AR process, and when it's not rejected, more likely it is nonlinear. So next, we got some mixed results, or even though more likely that is a nonlinear process. I was asked that the Kanon test is used to check the linearity of the model, and that's exactly right. And why is that so? Is that the null hypothesis is that the process is linear, and when the linearity is rejected, it is more likely that the underlying process is non-linear, that is not linear. So then let's use a threshold non-linearity test. So earlier we just tested whether the underlying process is linear or not. So here let's try to test whether the now let's compare to the AR model. So now let's do a threshold test, and in this threshold test we are testing whether the AR1 coefficients have no correlations with the regressors. So here, if they do correlate, the null is restricted and the model is not AR1, arranged AR1 model. Okay, this might, no, it was quick. So here, when we tried with tested whether the model is threshold test model, the p-value is way below 0.05, implying that the arranged AR1 model, AR model is rejected. So it's that's a evidence of the threshold. Let's add some lags here. So earlier we the p here is the number of the AR1 order. So earlier we had 1. Now let's change 5 over there. With one threshold, both case, that is D is set to 1, and here the p value is below 0.05, and this is a sign that it is a threshold model. The arranged AR1 AR model is rejected, AR5 in that case. And according to likelihood ratio test, again, let's test the nonlinearity threshold nonlinearity. And here, in both cases with AR1 model and AR5 model, we get the p value quite close to the zero. So the null is rejected. That is, in other words, AR process is rejected. More likely that is a linear nonlinear process. So next, as there are multiple ways to test the nonlinearities, let's test use a Hansen's linearity test against linearity model against self-existing threshold or the regressive model. And here, this will give us the first case, we're testing one threshold against two thresholds and one threshold against three. So let me say that again. In the first case, we're testing a linear AR model against one threshold TAR model. And in the next case, linear process against two threshold TAR model. So here in the both cases the null is rejected, meaning that AR1 model is rejected against one threshold and AR1 is rejected against two threshold. So is it one, is it two, one threshold or two threshold? Computer is calculating that in the next round. So here our null hypothesis is that the model has one threshold, and the alternative hypothesis is that the model has two thresholds. So let's see what the test says about that. Running these calculations can be some time consuming, but it should be over in 5 seconds. Yes. So here we tested one threshold model against two threshold model. And according to this test, the null was rejected. So one threshold was rejected against two thresholds. So according to this test, it should be two threshold TAR model with two thresholds. So what the thresholds are reflecting here, so in TAR setR model, the thresholds are a binary variables. So meaning that there is I'll actually answer you. Let's run some estimation. It's easier to show that way. Let's just run the model and I'll show you that. So now we're estimating a threshold model with 5 lakhs. We are assuming that there's one threshold, one lakh in the threshold. That makes the model as self-exist threshold is self-existing, and there's one number of thresholds. So here, these are our results. The L here is the lower regime, and the H here is the upper regime. So what we have basically done, based on one single data, we have estimated two AR5 models, and one of them represent a lower threshold in the series and another the higher threshold. And how are these series active weighted? That is based on the value of the threshold, and the calculated value of the threshold is around minus 0.05. So that means that when the series is below this value, the data generating process is this lower regime model. But when the value is above this threshold, it's the data generating block process is the higher regime model. So there are two mean equations that are generating the data generating process of the data. So here let's check our results. Here we find statistical significance at the lower regime. These results look give some evidence about the threshold. Nevertheless, when we looked at the higher threshold, we find non-statistical significance. So basically, this means that in the higher threshold, this process should be just pure white noise. Not there's no mean equation that's generating the data. Only it's about impact of the error term. So this result is not credible. And okay, when we compare the value of the observations in this model, according to our estimations, around 17% of the observations are at the lower threshold. And then five out of six observations are in the higher threshold. So basically, this is a sign that our model is not working very well. We're only able to estimate that one every sixth observation is generated by this process, but most of the data is white noise. That's not a credible answer. Let's calculate the mean values of the series so that we get some economic idea about the threshold. So below, that's a threshold for the negative values. So, and the value is quite high there. So that seems to be Possibly we get from these high values, we get some kind of idea that this lower regime model is only modeling the outlier, negative outliers in a series. So basically, if it's only about negative outliers, it is not a capturing anything economic, persistent economic process. There's the higher model is quite around zero, something positive there, but not much. Let's look at the series, then plot a little bit. So above we have, this is the raw data and this is the residual of the model. When we compare the scaling of this series, they seems to be quite the same, meaning that the model is able to take some noise out of the raw data, but nevertheless the residuals remain quite the same. And here the answer is the same. There are some within these blue bands, it is the series goes to the zero, no lag affecting there. So here, when we compare this series, there's not much change. The model seems to not improve that much. And same holds also for the partial autocorrelation. An average mutual information of the residual here, the series look also quite the same. It is something minor is taken out, but not much. So,
What is, excuse me, sir,
yeah.
what is ACF? What is ACF?
AMI.
ACF.
Sorry, could you repeat that again?
In the second graph, there was ACF of the
Okay.
residual, I think.
Okay, I'll plot that again.
Yes, ACF.
Okay, partial autocorrelation function.
Okay.
So we studied this autocorrelation function and partial autocorrelation function. It was during the second exercise, second demonstration session.
Okay, thank you.
And here, when we compare la lags of these processes, we just find zigzag and we find just these scatter plots there. The observations are, so to say, all over the place. There seems to be no economic trend like in the case that, for example, the black boxes would be around here and the red boxes would be around here. So they're just scattered all over the place. So sign of nonlinearity, sign of that there is sign of that this process is noise mostly. And if we compare more these lags, we get the same results. The dots are just all over the board. And here, the black line there is the threshold. We estimated around minus 0.5. And then you can see that black spikes are just activated here and there. So it seems that there seems to be mostly outliers. Or in other words, it is quite hard to just by looking at this graph to get some kind of idea what is going on. And here, threshold variable use, I believe that has to be the raw data and the threshold there. So meaning that when the threshold is activated, the next period will be activated. And here, comparing these values, so here, these blue lines here are the model set at value. They are the trimmed values, and usually this in the threshold autocorrelation models we use the trimmed value of 0.15. That means that we're assuming that this threshold should have at least 15% of the observations in order to there be some economically significant process going on, so that there's enough number of observation in the regime. So if, in other words, think about this in this way, if we move this blue line somewhere over here, this it could well be the case that the lower threshold model, that is observations on the left-hand side of this continuous variables, would be just outliers, nothing else. So we're assuming that the model should have something else than the only the outliers there. But nevertheless, the threshold is quite close to the lower trimmed value there, meaning that most likely there are some issues of the model. It's finding some kind of process, assuming a little bit over 50% of the 15% of the observations, but there seems to be not economically not much behind this process. Nevertheless, if we test the residuals of the model, there's no autocorrelation. That's a good sign. Then let's try, instead of using 5 lakhs, let's try using one setR one model, not setR five. SetR meaning that self-existing threshold, that self-existing means that the threshold are the lagged values of the model. And here we have set the lag values of the model to be one with one number of thresholds in the model. So here let's check when we removed number of AR lags from the model, the results stay around the same. The threshold value is the same as earlier. Also, we have the same number of observations in the model. Higher threshold has not much statistically significant, whereas the lower threshold has some. I was asked whether we can do these models using Stata. I believe so, but nevertheless, doing threshold analysis using Stata could be challenging, and this is a good side of the R, because R is able to it is easier to do threshold analysis using R than Stata. Nevertheless, threshold modeling is quite popular model, so I believe you should be able to do threshold modeling, and I believe the code should also be available in the Stata, the do files of the Stata. However, I can't now remember whether the code was as detailed as this R code here. So, and that's basically due to the deficiencies of the Stata as a programming language. Nevertheless, you should be able to do threshold modeling using Stata also. Maybe not
But
as
in the previous year, I found that this instead of do files in the do files, actually these threshold models, setR models, actually were not given so detailed. It was difficult to do them on the Stata.
Could you repeat that? So you got different results, or
No, I didn't actually get the due files there on this data, the previous year. I just took this course previous year, but I couldn't complete this course by somehow. Load of courses at that time to complete the credits anyway, but when I was doing these threshold practices, okay, that I was doing all these things on the stata, but that's up to this because when I came to threshold models, okay, settler models, I couldn't get a lot of instructions there on the do files.
Okay, so the settler modeling is missing there, but TAR modeling is there. So the only difference between this is basically that settler model uses the data process itself as a threshold variable. So it calculates the threshold from the data itself. So if it would be only TAR modeling, we would just use another variables as a threshold variable. So there seems to be some lag there. So okay, here, actually in the next part, we are doing a TAR modeling. So we're assuming that the threshold is coming from other variables than in this case.
Okay.
And nevertheless, threshold modeling, you could think this threshold modeling is as rather as something extra here in the course that most likely when you start doing your home assignment, you do not need to do threshold modeling. I've actually only seen one student doing threshold modeling and most likely that was also related. Yes, that was actually also related to his master's thesis. So he wanted to apply do some apply use TAR model in his master's thesis. So nevertheless, this TAR modeling is extra here, but it's something you should be just familiar with the basics, so to say. And unfortunately, Stata does not allow as much options as using R. So here, I checked setter one, so I was here. So let's check the mean values of the series. Okay, here they're actually around the same as earlier. I believe it was -17 there, so not much different there. Also, number of the observations, the lower regime is around the same as earlier. So here it seems that lower threshold is some kind of extended model of the outliers. Let's check the plot. So again, this is setter one model, only one lag there, AR1. Here, compared to the raw data, to the residual, they're almost the same, meaning that the model is not able to capture much about the error process. Not much there. Let's just skip them. And here, when we look at this lag, again, we just find that the observations of these both regimes are just all over the place. So there is not a strong process there. And here again, threshold is quite low, close to the minimum value of the observation that's there in the model. So it seems the result did not change much. When we decreased the number of the lags, the test statistic became a little bit smaller than earlier. I believe it was 0.6 earlier. Yes. So some No, so nothing changed much there. So since earlier, what we just immediately did, we tried setR5 and setR1 models with one threshold. Now let's do the same, estimate these both models, but instead of one threshold, assume two thresholds. Take some time to calculate the process. Okay, two thresholds here. One of the threshold, the estimated threshold remained almost the same as earlier. That is a sign of the robustness. Then there's another threshold around 0.2. And then when we compare the model, parameter estimates and the statistical significance here in the lower regime are almost the same as earlier. So the lower regime remained the same as we added an additional threshold. Then there's this middle regime here. It seems that there is something seems to be going on. There's some statistical significance. And then the higher threshold remains around the same as earlier. So these are only statistically significant at the 10% level. So it's purely noise there. Let's check the number of the proportion of the points in the regime. The lower regimes have the same number of observations as earlier. But then the higher regime is cut into two parts. In the middle regime has the 50% of the observations, and the high regime has the 30% of the observations. Nevertheless, well, let's check the mean values first. So here, okay, here, the number of the lower threshold is the same as in the setR1 modeling, so that's the same. So then there seems to be some threshold. Then there's a higher threshold and. So basically it adds another negative. There are two negative thresholds there. One seems to be some kind of outlier negative threshold. Another seems to be some kind of a depreciation threshold. And then actually this so we are estimating. Yes.
Minus sign is indicating depreciation and positive sign is for appreciation, I
Yes,
believe.
exactly. So that's Japanese yen. So there are some. So that's the mean value. So this is some high positive shocks in the appreciation of the yen, and then there's some minor appreciation of the yen, and then depreciation of the yen. So those would be the processes. Let's check the plots. Here again, they remain the raw data and the residuals. That is the part of the modeling that's left after the modeling. So they remain quite the same, not much. There, not much there, some minor changes. And then these information values are not they're just drifting, so nothing statistically significant there. And then lagged values. So here again, we get the same results that the scatter plots is just. The observations in these regimes are just all over the place. there seems to be no no pattern between them. Okay, here that's the lower threshold and the upper threshold. So when the lagged values of the process has been somewhere there, the next threshold is activated. Here, the lower regime stays quite close to the lower bound, whereas the middle regime is that seems to be quite plausible explanation. It is not that there's at least some there's well diff, it is quite far away from the upper threshold of the dreaming. Let's do the autocorrelation test. No autocorrelation in the series. So let's compare this model, this setR5 model with two thresholds in the setR1 model with two thresholds. Okay, so in other words, when we decrease the number of the lags in the setR model, we are now eliminating the possibility that a higher threshold is related to some spurious noise in the data. So earlier, okay, it seems that there's one lag in the middle regime is also statistically significant. So here seems to be some process there and some process also in the upper regime. The values are around the same as earlier. Okay, here there's some node. Actually, there's also no change there. So when we remove number of the lags in the model, the results stayed relatively the same as earlier. So that's a sign of some robustness, but nevertheless, first of all, let's calculate the regimes. So the extreme appreciation, some minor appreciation, and some moderate depreciation regime. Okay, here again, up raw data and what is left after the modeling, the residuals. So here there seems to be quite the same. The model is missing something. And here again, the observations are all over the place. And here, and nothing changes for sure there. So when we decrease the number of the lags in the setR model using two threshold, the models did not change that much. Here, if we looked at these variables, the problem is that, for example, these AR1 parameters are really small. That means that the persistence in the regime is having a minimal impact into the behavior in this persist in this regi within this regime. So if AR1 parameter would be, let's say, like above 0.85, that would be a sign of a high persistence in the data process. So these values are quite minimal, meaning that if a shock happens, a regime, most of these shocks, this persistence in these regimes only takes small amount of this shock away. And the higher regime seems to be more like a white noise. No persistence there. So instead of doing a setter modeling, let's use a external threshold. So in the setter model, self-existing threshold, the threshold is coming from the variable itself, but now we're using another variable as a threshold. So I was asked whether can we use AR2 or AR3 to check the variability in the results or the robustness of the results? And for sure we can do that. So I most like I will not do them here, but if you would do them there on your own, and I recommend that you will do that, you would most likely see the same results as these, that the results should not change that much. We just do AR1 and AR5, and if we did the same modeling between them, I believe the results would not change that much from this. Again, my internet connection seems to be unstable now, so I'll have to be careful. I have to check that the recording is working. It says that my internet connection, there are some issues, but I believe hopefully they're gone, so it was only a temporary problem. So let's continue. Instead of doing setter, let's do TAR model. So I was cut short. I was cut short. Let's continue. I believe it should. For some reason, I have some stability issues with my internet, and this is quite annoying. But now everything seems to work again. So let's continue. So quick reminder, and sorry about this continuously repeating myself, is that earlier our threshold was in the yen series, now it's in the pound to euro series. So X threshold is coming from another variable. And and this is the model that was estimated with one threshold. And now the threshold is around minus 0.24. It's a little bit different than earlier. It's coming from another variable. Some statistical significance there. Small parameter values. So most likely we're modeling noise here or some spurious process. But nevertheless, let's study the things a little bit more detail. Okay, here our regimes get a different interpretation. So here it is about yen to US dollar depreciating that regime, and then another regime is around with const mean around the constant value. Let's check the number of the observations. Okay, here the lower regime has just barely over the 15% of the observations, so the modeling has set the minimum value at that it should have at least the 15%. So in other words, because of the algorithm that is calculating this model, it's calculated in that way that it's just barely above the minimum threshold. So that's a, in other words, this model is even worse than the earlier model where we had around 17%, so not much far away from the 15%. Let's calculate the mean. Actually, I did calculate them already. Yes, I calculated them, and then let's see the plots again. So the plots will show us the same picture as earlier, that when you compare to the raw data to the model data, you see actually no difference between them. No difference. And here, the plots, observations are all over the place. Nothing there. Nevertheless, no autocorrelation in the series. So during standard autocorrelation test where the null hypothesis is null autocorrelation, the p-value way above 0.05, the null stays in power, no autocorrelation. So nevertheless, this model seems not to be working that well. Nevertheless, let's estimate a TAR1 model using the same threshold variables. Okay, the threshold value is we threw some lags away. The threshold value stayed the same. The points are not so for short. Nothing changed there. But there's some okay here. Here's some sign of the non-robustness of the series. Here, I believe earlier it was positive. Yes. So we did a minor change into a model. We threw some additional lags away, and our value, mean value of one of our thresholds changed dramatically. So here it was around 6/6, and here it became negative. So that's a sign of this model is not robust. It's not working. And again, if we go this plot through again, you'll hear the same story as earlier. No change between the raw data above and the residuals of the model below. Nevertheless, no autocorrelation. What if we add another threshold to a TAR model? Maybe we're just missing one additional threshold. Earlier we find some signs of the some possible middle regime, but our model, even though our model was not that good. So we added a threshold. This is around the same as earlier. This is the new threshold variable. So when it's between these two values, we are in the middle regime, and when we're below this value, low regime, above this value, high regime. So here, the middle regime, I believe it has the most number of observations, yes, around 60%. Nevertheless, according to this modeling, it should be pure noise, so nothing there. This model is not working. Something going on in the low regime and the high regime, but this can also be some spurious noise. Or most likely it is some spurious noise. Okay, here, when we have lag number 5, this value is the same as earlier. This is a little bit different, I believe. Actually, not so. Let's check that one from earlier. Minus, so it's relatively close to it, not much. Minus 0.3 away from it. But okay, then there seems to be another negative. Then there's another negative regime. So here, let's not think too much into that, because most likely when we do a minor change in the modeling, we find that this modeling is not just working. Again, you can check this plot. I have told you the story so many times, so not between when we compare the raw data to the model data, nothing seems to be happening there. So next, TAR1 with two thresholds. Thresholds stay relatively the same. Or is there a minor change? I actually have to check that one. Yes, actually, there was a change. We decreased the number of the lags in the model, and the threshold variable of another threshold variable last became something else. So it is not robust. Again, lower regime has something, but the middle and high regime seems to be pure noise. Okay, then also these mean values of the series become something else. So for short, this modeling is not working, and we do not bother ourselves to look these plots again, comparing the raw data and the model data. But nevertheless, there should not be any autocorrelation in the series, so at least something is working there. So in the next part, we are doing smooth threshold autoregression modeling. So I believe this will be done relatively quickly. Okay, it's only like 50 lines, so it's done relatively quickly. And after this, we'll have some break. So what I did here, I calculated some. I tested the linearity of the model, and in the first case, the linearity. So here, let's check the. So it was with two different standard errors calculating the same test. So here, with standard errors, so to say, the p-value is rejected, and then also, when we apply a robust standard errors, that is control some noise in the calculation of the test statistic, it becomes also rejected. So here, add two zeros there. Let's see if it works like this. So in other words, doing just by throwing that here, you can see the it's 0.03, so rejected at the 5% level. So the linearity was restricted there in both case using a smoothing transition model. So here, before showing you the estimation, the main difference between the threshold TAR and STAR modeling is that in the TAR model, the threshold is a binary variable. It is either one or zero. Either one of these equations in the one of these mean equation is activated or not. Here, the threshold variable functions as a smooth process. That is a continuous process. So in other words, it is not only zero or one, it is a continuous variable. So the threshold operates in a line of degree. So in other words, sometimes it could be that another process is like 60% activated and another process is 40% activated, and sometimes the other process can be like 80% activated and another process 60% activated. So The threshold activation is here a continuous variable. Let's run setter modeling. So here's specs. Okay, nothing there. We specified the specifics of the model earlier. It was above here. Two states with intercept and five AR order in both cases. There are also some other options to expand the model, but we did not do them. So let's check the results here. Okay, here the gamma variable controls the speed of transition between the regime. This is the continuous variable I talk about. So when this value is higher, the shifts or changes in the switching between this regime is quicker. And when this value is low, that means that the processes in these regimes are more persistent. Nevertheless, when we look at these models, we actually before that, let's say something about the C variable. That is the lambda variable, or in other words, lambda variable in the threshold modeling is the threshold, the threshold value itself. So it sets the boundary between the thresholds. Above this value, higher threshold is activated, and below this value, lower threshold is activated. So when we compare this result, these regimes, there seems to be nothing there. Something, for some reason, the AR1 lag is statistically significant in both cases, and there's that is most likely a sign of some spurious noise in the data. So the model is not capturing anything real, only some noise that's there. Let's calculate the mean values of the series, nevertheless. There's not much diff. They're almost the same, so nothing there. Okay, here it's the probability of the state one being activated. So most likely it is only one process that's. It's like throwing a coin each point of time, and that's how the regime is activated. Negative values, state dynamic there. Unfortunately, I can't see what's that sign. Okay, it's most likely it's about the fitted values. If you look at the descaling and compare it to descaling, it's like this is the model dynamics, and here it is the fitted values, and they're compared to the actual values here. So raw data is the black here, and blue here is the model data. So it seems that the model data is only drifting around zero, so it is not capturing much. So then instead of using AR5, let's use AR1. Some evidence of the rejection of the linear process, but when we threw some lags away, it's actually more likely the case that the underlying process is linear and not non-linear. Robust standard errors are correcting the calculation of the state statistic, given that there is some variability in the residual or possibly also autocorrelation. So let's estimate the model. We threw some lags away, and now most likely, we are not finding anything. Yes, exactly, almost so. There seems to be no. We threw some lags away. Our comma is around the same as earlier. The threshold changed a little bit. No, there was no big change there. The robust in that sense, but nevertheless, if we calculate these mean values, they're probably mostly. There's no big difference between them. Actually, now there's just a bigger difference between them. Bigger difference between them than earlier. Nevertheless, this process is nevertheless not capturing much. Yeah, and this plots look almost the same as earlier. The model for sort is not capturing that much. So next, let's try three different regimes. Maybe we're just missing one regime. Let's check that one out. Okay, nothing there. It is purely just noise, nothing there. We added a regime, but nothing seems to happen. What about our mean value? Some difference there and here. Plots. Some differences between the dynamics. Nevertheless, when we compare the state dynamics to the actual values, this model seems to be working a little bit better than earlier, but nevertheless, it's not capturing much. So for short, if this is a regime model, this regime seems to be something else we cannot model it using TAR or TAR, SETAR or STAR model. The last one being smoothing transition model. difference between the previous two is that the threshold variable operates as a continuous variable as not, and not as a binary variable. So let's have now a 15-minute break and continue 20 past 2. Sorry, I missed a question in the chat. Okay, that happened earlier. That was some issue with the internet, so nothing else there. So let's pause the recording. Welcome back, and let's do the third and then the third exercise. Let's see, not the home assignment, rather here. So during this demonstration session, first we did some linear modeling in the first exercise, but I applied some techniques of using interaction terms, and then we did some threshold modeling. We did some threshold modeling. And then in a third part, we're doing Markov switching modeling. Okay, let's go through the let's go to the Markov switching modeling. Kari Heimonen was just calling me a minute ago, so I'll have to check if he has something really. I'll just write a really quick email to him that I'm busy right now. So sorry again about the interruptions. Let's continue to Markov switching modeling. So here the Markov switching modeling. So in the TAR and SETAR modeling and also STAR modeling, the regime was observable. It was some threshold value. So here the regime switching is a latent variable, something we do not just observe. So for example, from time to time, economies can be, there can be a boom period, and then economies can go, then some crisis happened and they bust. It becomes bust becomes their dominating regime. So we do not directly observe when this breakup happens from one economic regime to another. That stop sometimes stock prices are going up and then suddenly the next year they're going downwards. It's something unobservable how this regime switching happens. So that's the data. Let's construct the triangular arbitrage. That's the data. So basically we're doing the same variable transformation we already have done, but I'm just running the code there. So in this plot, the blue line is bound to euro and then this Japanese yen to US dollar. Like we looked earlier, there seems to be some different regimes here happening. So until 2008, the processes stay are relatively stable, and then there seems to become some inverse correlation between 10 that lasts until around 2016, and that means Brexit, and after that the dynamics change again. So let's try to find whether there's some this could be modeled using Markov switching model. So that was in level, next in relative changes. Again, the model has a tendency to revolve around its mean tendency, but there seems to be a lot of outliers in the Japanese yen, and then there are also outliers in the pound to euro, and also volatility clustering. Sometimes the variability is high and sometimes small. The bounds of the variabilities change over time. So Markov switching modeling is in the first phase, we'll just run a standard linear model, and here we're estimating Japanese yen, and we have the bound euro on the right-hand side. When we look this really simple dynamics, we see statistical significance. That is a good sign. There should be something there, but nevertheless, if we test the residuals of the model, we find that when the p-value is so low, below 0.05, the null hypothesis is rejected. That means that there is an autocorrelation in the series. And then when we look at how the residuals are behaving, we see this straight line here is the normal distribution. We see there's a deviation away from the normal distribution, and we see a lot of outliers here. This series is heavy from outliers. Box test is it is an autocorrelation test. So in this case, I said it. I applied Ljung box autocorrelation test there. If you want to check what are its options, just write question mark and name of the function, and it'll print you the help commands. Loading the help command should not take this long, but it's slow for some reason. So if you want to check different options during this autocorrelation test, instead of using Ljung box, you can also choose Box Beer. So these are the different options to do autocorrelation test using only one command. So next, let's plot the residual autocorrelation function and partial autocorrelation function. So this is the partial autocorrelation function. Okay, it for some reason it prints the lag. In actually the lag, you could throw away all the zeros from this lag. So how to check that one? Just compare 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 5, actually 6. So this is daily data. So I have no idea why the lag is so off. Nevertheless, just by calculating, do not po so you can just ignore the number of the lag there. That's actually the lag number 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's over there, lag number 6. So this should be 12. Nevertheless, autocorrelate this plots shows some autocorrelation series. So let's look at the Markov switching modeling now. So here I'm assuming there are two different regimes. Both of them have a 1 AR lag, and then I'm allowing all of these variables to switch. So in other words, when they can switch, both of these regimes can have their variables of their own. They do not have any shared variables just by construction. So here in the first regime, this seems to be a negative regime, recursive regime. Let's calculate the mean value soon. Some statistical significance. Okay, there's nothing in the second regime. That seems to be a pure noise regime. Lower the residual standard error, better to fit with the data. So some difference here, not much. And so proportion the model explains from the variability of the data is quite minimal. So overall, let's calculate mean values. So here, as it is about the Japanese yen, the positive value is about the depreciation regime, and the negative value is about appreciation regime. So there seems to be two regimes in the currency data. In one regime, the yen is losing its yen is appreciating, gaining value, and in another regime, it is losing its value. AR1 was only statistically significant in one regime, that however, the variables are some, at least they are different. So there seems to be some, there seems to be different regime. Supports the different regime. However, this another regime just being basically pure noise, that is not a well good sign. And also in another regime, we find that pound to euro exchange rate is explaining has a statistically significant connection with the Japanese yen, and when this mean and this is an inverse relation, meaning that when there's a 1% increase in the valuation of the when the euro is appreciating against British pound, this has a negative impact on a Japanese yen. Actually, sorry, positive impact on the Japanese yen. So when euro is appreciating, also, yen is appreciating against US dollar. And then the transition probabilities. Here, the interpretation is that the probability that we're at regime one at, let's say, next period is. Given that we were at the re same regime at the same period, is around that. So that's the interpretation of how to interpret the transition in the probabilities. So there's when we are at the regime one, there's around 5% probability that we'll switch into another regime two next period. And if we are at the regime two at a given moment, there's an even smaller probability that we'll switch into regime one. So these regimes seems to be quite persistent. When we are in one regime, we also will most likely remain there. Then let's do some model diagnostics, autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation function of the residuals. Residuals are behaving quite well, but nevertheless, when we square them, we're observing some autocorrelation. So that's some issues with the model. So this is pooled residuals. When they're over or below this blue line, they're not different from zero. They're not noise, so to say. And we can see that there are a lot of these outliers in the series. So again, we have these issues with the outliers. Outliers are most likely messing up our calculation process here. And this is the model residuals again, the theoretical distribution, red line being the theoretical distribution, the observed values start to diverge away from the theoretical distribution. So again, this is a sign of the outlier. So there are a lot of outliers messing up our estimation. Let's see the regime switching, smooth and filtered probabilities. So here, unfortunately, it does not give us the time values directly, so we cannot. In another graph, it will. So we have just around 5,000 observations, and this is the time series when we are at one regime in the time series or in another. So the difference between the smooth probabilities and the filtered probabilities is that the formula of the smooth probability is this. So transition state that we're in one regime, either one or two, given that the earlier observation, given all the data up to this point, not the entire data set, but parts of the data set until this point, conditional on the model, and also conditional on the model we estimated. So these are the red lines. Red lines are modeling the transitional probability in that extent, and filtered probabilities, the only difference is that it applies the entire data set in calculating the probability. So here, if we think about when the economy, or for example, when the stock market crashes, this is the probability that the stock market will crash like today or tomorrow, based on the previous data earlier leading to this point. But this is the all the data we have estimated. So for example, all the behavior in the model, and we're looking, so to say, outside of the model. So in a sense that if the smooth probabilities give us the probability that tomorrow we will be in a recession, and this probability is something, the filtered probability will give us the exact probability of switching into a recession, exact date when the recession began. Okay, this is the data, raw data, and the probabilities. So here, for example, Here, this is unfortunately it does not print the timeline there. It would be helpful, but this is when our data beginnings from the beginning of the 2002. So this is related to the financial crisis, about Japanese 10. This is related to the around 2013. So this is related to the Abenomics, implementation of the Abenomics. And then there's these outliers there. Nevertheless, just by looking at this data, you can see that when the volatility of this series is high, the regime one is activated. So this regime one seems to be some high volatility state in the process. So when the volatility is high, we're in the regime one, and when the volatility is lower, we will be in the regime two. So the good thing about this model is that it's able to capture the increase in volatility and divide into a different regimes. But the bad side is that it's the only thing we know about using this model is about this model volatility. We have no idea about the other characteristics of the data. So we are not even certain whether. So earlier we used the change in pound to euro exchange rate as a right-hand side variable. Let's drop that off and only use a intercept and see whether there's some change. So again, we said that we have two regimes, and then we have a AR of one. Both of these regimes have their own lag that affects them, and this is the switching variable. And I believe this was we'll let the constant term switch in both cases, and then we let the AR parameter switch in both places, and then when we'll let the residual error also switch in both regimes. So let's okay, we threw the bound the euro away from the model and lost all the statistical significance. So the results became a little bit worse. AR1 lost its statistical significance. The regime one is the positive regime and depreciation regime, and the regime two is the appreciation regime. 0.5 minus 1.9, so there's some change there. But the values become a little bit more extreme given the earlier values when earlier values. Okay, another one of these remained quite the same. Not big change there. However, the transition probabilities remain the same as earlier. Here actually will, so here the regime one is given these probabilities. In the earlier model, I believe they were in the regime two. So let's check that one. Yes, exactly. So here, the name, this only mean earlier, this was the regime two and this was the regime one. So the regimes only changed place only in name. Nothing else happened there. So I was asked whether the data guides us only in doing the statistical analysis, or should we pay attention to also to something else. So here, Here in this exercise, we're only doing a database analysis that we're just trying to figure out what the underlying data could be, basically doing statistical analysis, see different options, what happens there. However, it'd be better if you have some strict theory underlying doing this analysis. So, for example, if a theory tells you that the data have two regimes, so you could just take the number of the regimes just as a granted and apply that a framework to interpret your results. So here our method is more a data-based, but it can go in both ways for short to say the same thing. You can also do the theoretic based analysis or data-based analysis. So here the transitional probabilities did not change much. They're around the same as earlier. So we dropped one variable off. It did not affect the transition probabilities, meaning that it means having a bound to euro on the right-hand side of the equation does not affect the transitional probabilities. So in that sense, the cross effect from the other exchange rate to Japanese yen is not important. Model diagnostics above the residual is well behaving, below not much. Below we see autocorrelation in the squared residuals. And here we also find black line going up and down the blue dotted value, that's a sign of the autocorrelation. And then we also find that our distribution has fat tails, lot of outliers affecting our series. So in this Markov switching model, we're assuming that our residual, our error term is well behaving, and that seems to be not the case, that the residual has something erred, something else there. Then let's look at the plot probabilities. So smooth and filtered probabilities being a state one or state two when state is activated. Now this picture is better because it shows us the real data and how that is aligned with the model. So here, when the gray line is activated, that seems to be low volatility regime. And the regime two in this modeling case is the high volatility regime. So again, good sign of this modeling is this model is able to capture the changes in the volatility, but that's the only thing. We're also interested in other characteristic, and it is not helpful in that. So maybe it could be also the case that the underlying process has three different regimes, so let's just try that. Let's see what we got. So K specifies the number of the regimes, P the AR parameter, and switching allows all of these model all, both of all of these regimes to have the variables of their own. So for example, if according to the estimation, two regimes can have same variable but the third one not. If this would be set false, all of these models would have the same estimation. But we allow the model have the teams have different values here. Running these estimations can be some time consuming. This is not even the worst possible case. For example, if you're doing some Bayesian simulation, it can take multiple hours running these commands. Here it's only a 1 minute. So here, let's look at the model. Some statistical significance in the lagged value of the regime one. Okay, they're almost the same, but that's noise, not different from zero. Also, okay, so here the second and third variable seems to be, according to this modeling, there are just white noise processes. Here, our standard errors are higher than earlier, so that's a worser fit with the data. Check the mean values. Okay, one is the one positive and two negative, so there should be two appreciation regime. However, the difference between the mean values of these processes is not big, meaning that most likely we're just when we added an additional regime, we only introduced some noise in this modeling. Model diagnostics, again, the residuals. Yes, about the interpretation of this. Regimes, negative values, this is so we are modeling Japanese yen. So the negative values are about appreciation and the positive values are about the depreciation. When the value of the yen increases, you need more units of yen in order to buy 1 unit of US dollar. Also, autocorrelation also here in the pooled residuals, and also the normal. We'll see a lot of outliers here. What about the probabilities? Smoothing probabilities and transitional probabilities here. When we compare the first and third regime, there's not. It's like. There seem to be quite similar, so it seems that according to this picture, we are only introduced some cut hair splitted noise in the data. I'll rather take the second regime because it looks better. So here again, the second regime is able to capture some the high volatility of the noise, even though it's not doing that good with that like earlier. It's performing worse than earlier in all even in capturing the higher volatility. Nevertheless, it's so for short, we added an additional regime and this did not it only produced worse results. So next. Let's change the estimated variables upside down. So earlier we had Japanese yen on the left-hand side, and then we had pound to euro on the right-hand side. So now let's reverse them so that pound to euro is on the left-hand side and the Japanese yen on the right-hand side. Whether there's some action moving from the yen to the pound to euro. So let's estimate the model. Just running standard linear model, we find statistical significance. So that says hints about the possibility that there could be something. Nevertheless, when we look at the residuals of the standard linear model, we find that it is severely affected by the outliers. Nevertheless, let's run the model. Two regimes both have their own AR1 order. And we allow all of these variables to switch all each regime to have their own variables. Okay, here. Both of the AR1 variables are statistically significant. Nevertheless, they're almost the same. So that's contrary to a regime switching. So in other words, it seems that there's a constant persistence in this model that is not related to the regime switching, and it is statistically significant. Then there's the impact of the yen. It is statistically significant in one regime, but not in the other. 1.8, so that's not bad. 1.4. Smaller this value, better the fit with the model with the data. What about the regime switching? Okay, here. The regime seems to be quite persistent, so let's calculate the mean values of the series. So basically, lower second regime is the zero regime, and the higher regime is the regime where the euro is appreciating against British pound. So here, if we are at the regime one, it's a 95% probability that we will remain at the same regime one also next period, and 5% probability in switching to another regime. Whereas in another regime, the probability is persistence of the regime is even higher. It's only about switching, it's about 2%. So that's switching happens quite rarely. And here, according to this modeling, the second it is the second regime is mostly a noise regime. However, if both of these processes have this around the same estimated AR1 coefficient, so in other words, it is questionable whether this is real. The underlying process has two regimes or only one. Let's check the model diagnostics, autocorrelation. Here we find autocorrelation. And also here, pooled residuals. Okay, there's a lot less autocorrelation than in the earlier case. Nevertheless, some autocorrelation there, signs of the autocorrelation. Nevertheless, the normality is the issue. Let's compare the data again. We find that when the regime is activated, that's the gray line. We are in a high volatility regime, and another regime is the lower volatility regime. So here again, for example, here during a global financial crisis, it's quite natural to think that we were in a high volatility. The fear in the markets was higher. during this period and to during this. This is related to the euro, Brexit, and events leading to the Brexit. That's the Brexit shock there. An interesting one about the volatility is so much higher before the Brexit, because before the referendum, it was only few days, the pool only turned towards Brexit only few days before the referendum. So I'm not sure why there is higher volatility before the referendum. So there was some building of the volatility there, but after that, mostly the lower regime. So again, we find two different volatility regimes, but nothing else. So let's now throw the Japanese yen away from the right-hand side of the model and see whether it has any impact on the results. For example, if the transitional probabilities remain the same as here, it is a sign that the Japanese yen is not affecting the calculation of the transitional probabilities, and that is exactly the case. The transitional probabilities remain the same. AR parameters are even more closely the same as earlier, so this is a sign that it is rather a one univariate AR1 model than two different regimes affecting the zero. Again, here the low estimated value refers to the low persistence in the volatility, meaning that when the shock happens, it will not stay in the model. Or in other words, the model is really prone to the diff shocks different periods. Again, the mean values of both of these regimes are the same. So another seems to be, and this is likely the low volatility regime. This is revolves around zero, whereas the higher volatility series is has a higher mean value. Model diagnostics. Again, squared residuals show autocorrelations, whereas the residuals do not. Pooled residuals, some sign of the autocorrelation. And then again, a lot of outliers. And again, if we look at the regime switching, the regime shifting seems to be in a second moment, higher volatility state and a lower volatility state. Nothing, we're not able to catch anything else. So here, it really good that you're present, you're awake. So if we could control these events by introducing dummy variables in the Markov switching modeling, it would only difference would be, and how to do that, if you have a dummy variable there, you could just add it into this model. Let's just say dummy variable one. So if you want to control something there, you can just add that in the linear regression model, and it'll control the impact of that. We are only going through the basics here, so we're not doing the more interesting stuff. But that's the way how to add a dummy variable and, for example, control the entire global financial crisis there and whatever you seem want to economically control. And then you just have to be careful that you allow these variables to switch there. And then let's introduce another regime, three regime model. So two regime model, we did not find much there. Let's just introduce another regime there and just see what happens. Earlier, whenever we have introduced a additional regime, we're only basically sliced down. So hair splitted some noise. So most likely we will not find anything, but let's just check what happens. So here we calculated mean values. Even though just by looking at the mean values of this regime, there seems to be some economic significance there. So according to the mean values, the middle regime would be just a moderate behavior of this series. But then the mean value of the higher regime would be the x would be So we are, let me, I forgot what we were estimating here. So we're estimating a pound to euro. So this is the appreciation of the euro regime and depreciation of the euro here. Or in other words, this would be depreciation of the British pound and appreciation of the British pound. Let's look at the results more carefully. AR1 statistically significant, AR1 statistically significant. Okay, here we have two diff here we see some differences in the AR parameters. That's a promising in some extent. So when the AR1 parameters are not the same, it seems that there really are different levels of persistence, different regimes in the model, and not some one process. But what about the transitional probabilities? So here, okay, now there's more rapid switching between the regime. If we would be in regime one, it'd be a 60% probability to remain there, 5% probabilities to switch in the second regime, and around 30% probability to switch in the third regime. However, here this is a sign of a bad model. The probability is so slow, meaning that if we are at the second regime, 1.5% probability of switching into first regime and basically zero probability to regime switching into the second third regime. So it's like saying there's no switching there. This third regime looks a little bit better, but whenever you have around pure zero values in the transitional probabilities, that's a sign of that regime. That's model is not working. Then the model diagnostics, again, autocorrelation, a little bit less autocorrelation than earlier, but at least we're improving in some extent. Okay, maybe also less autocorrelation here. But yeah, nevertheless, there are a lot of these outliers that are affecting our series. What about our regimes? Here again, Maybe I'll. So this is the transitional smooth. Okay, here we see again there's no big difference between regime one and regime three. So we're that's a sign that two regime model is better. So overall, when the regime transition is not working, empirically, it means that there is basically no switching. So
Can we say that it is not presenting the data or like converging?
exactly so. So basically, persistence in one regime is so high that it's useless to assume another regime where could the switch happen. So it's not able to model the underlying data. Hopefully, I was able to answer right into your question. But here, looking at the smooth and filter probabilities between these regimes, we observe that the regime one and the regime three are quite similar. So there's no, the re regime three seems to be useless. And here again, the model is able to capture the volatility, but nothing else. So overall, in the C part, we did a lot of Markov switching estimations, and the main result was that there seems to be different regimes for volatility. So let's finally, in the D part, let's try Markov switching cards regime modeling. So modeling time-varying volatility here. So the difference between the pure Markov switching model is that Markov switching models the mean equation. So now we're shift our focused away from the mean equation to the second moment, that is the volatility. And now we're modeling the volatility as a regime switching model. So giving volatility can be higher or volatility can be lower. So let's try to get something out of this modeling. So again, that's Japanese yen. Again, there seems to be I can also before we go through this D part, I can also say what's basically the real underlying issue here, what we're doing. So we're doing this anal we're using Markov switching model and all these nonlinear models, and our data is in a daily frequency. So here the thing is that daily frequency is usually so noisy that these models just do not work there. So for example, if we look at this graph here, we see a lot of outliers. So if we calculate the standard deviation of the yen changes, so standard deviation of the yen is around 0.6. So if you think about lines in both below and above the zero value there, you can see a lot of these outlier events that go away minus or one plus one sigma. So here, for example, here this outlier is around six, so it's 10 times the standard deviation. So there, this model is so full of outliers that this underlying data is so full of outliers that these models that are not so good as modeling high frequency data just do not just work here. So in other words, for example, Markov switching model would be better. I think the monthly data is the lowest frequency to use the Markov switching model. So it's in the monthly data, the role of noise is not that high. And for example, Markov switching cards model to opt weekly data is would be the better option to do. So we would get better results if we only used weekly data, for example, in this case. But now we have just assumed that now we're doing this analysis using daily data, and the underlying problem is the role of high noise in this data. We have just so much outlier that our model just is does not work well with them. So let's estimate Markov switching cards model. So let's try to apply two different regimes of volatility there and see what we will got. So here, like in the cards model, you see these familiar parameters there. This is the alpha one, the shock parameter, and this is the beta, is the persistence of the volatility. So the alpha one was the previous shock impact of the previous value of the volatility, and beta one is the persistence of the volatility. So here, the first regime seems to be quite nice. The volatility is alpha is only 0.04, so it's quite calm regime. 0.93 there, the high persistence of the volatility there. And in the second model, the persistence parameter is not different from the zero. So the second, actually, that's the shock parameter is not different from the zero. So in other words, this model is not working. Nevertheless, both of these regimes in this volatility are statistically significant, and the interpretation is like this, that if we are at the regime one at period t, so next period we would remain at the same regime would be 84, and then probability of switching in this case is 16%. Next period, regime two. And state probabilities are the unconditional probabilities of this model. So here, the volatility of the first regime, this well-behaving probability is high. The model remains more in this volatility, lower probability than in the higher probability. And there this was this shock parameter was not statistically significant, so the model is not really working. Nevertheless, let's do some additional analysis here. So this is here, these are the values of the unconditional volatility that were calculated here. This is for the first regime, and this is for the second. We see that the unconditional volatility in the first regime is lower than in the second regime, where it's a quite extreme, multiple times higher. So, in other words, doing this analysis, we could point out that the second regime is affected severely by the outliers. Outliers are mixing the calculation of the second regime volatility. Let's nevertheless, before we change our model, let's do a little bit more analysis here. This is smooth probabilities of the first regime. So a lot of switching there. Yes. A lot of peer switching there. Let's see this one. This is the second probability. So, for example, we could do this model could work better if we just applied weekly data that is less noisy than this data. We would get a more robust results. Other possibility would be to check what about eliminating some of the outliers from the series because they're messing up the calculation, but they're not that important. So we could eliminate them. Or one of the possibility could be also this goes a little bit further away in the modeling is that we would first of all run a linear regression model and control the residuals. Then we would save the residuals from that model so that our outliers would be controlled better, assuming that they would be well behaving, and then take these residuals and start doing the same analysis, this volatility analysis for these residuals. That would also be one probability or one option what to do here. Okay, that's unrealized volatility calculated. See, let's check how our model is working. Here above is the raw data. That's the absolute values of the data, so it's only positive values. And here is the model. Here are some problems of the model. Yeah, but when we go here below, we're seeing that our model is from there are periods it is working better. For example, here when the volatility is increasing, our model is better able to move along with the absolute values of the unrealized returns multiplied by the unrealized volatility. So model is going in the same direction as the data. They are never perfectly aligned, but it is a good sign that they're moving in the same direction. So in the next part, we had some issues. We find out that our second regime was this high regime volatility. So let's just throw a persistence away from this volatility and just assume the second regime as a pure shock volatility regime. So we're first model, like earlier, is based on the CARDS, and the second is pure ARDS model. And now we get our second model. Now also our second model is statistically significant, so we improved our modeling. But yeah, but if we are in this high volatility modeling, it's only for the short period of time. So here the interpretation is that if we at time point T, we're at the regime two, the probability that we will switch next period in another regime is quite high. So it's basically this tells us that the second regime is basically modeling just outlier behavior in this series. So when the outlier is activated next period, it will move, the model will move next period away from these outliers.
Model will diverge
Sorry.
in the second period, in the second regime.
In the second regime,
Isn't it? Then
Sorry, I did not follow.
I'm asking that the regime switching from first period to second
So you
is there is a low probability of regime switching.
okay, let's go through the transition matrix about how the probabilities work again. So if at the point, if we today would be at the regime one, today at the regime one, tomorrow we would remain at the re same regime, would be around 186. 5 out of 6 probability. And the switching into this higher probability, higher volatility series would be around 1 to 6. Instead, if we would be in this high volatility regime, this outlier probability series, the prob today, the probability of switching into low probability series would be really high, and the probability of remaining in this high outlier series would be quite low. I have to check that I have the right. Okay, I was doing this modeling. So here let's look at the graphs. Again, when when we look at this y-axis, when the value is around here from over 0.5, this regime is dominating the process. So this is the low probability process. And when we look at the smooth another regime, it's basically only this activated outlier effects here. And the probability is one, the regime two is activated here. So there's no persistence in this second regime. Let's look at the graph. So here again, above raw data, then just the absolute values of the returns, then the model process, and then we compare the model process to the absolute values of the returns. So here again, we observe that the model is going in the right direction with the data. But overall, the problem is that we have just so much outliers here. So the outliers, when the another regime is activated, it is only the outlier regime. Nevertheless, even though we already have our answer, let's just add another regime here and see what will happen. So we could think in that way that, oh, what about if it's so that there's will leave one model to be this shock regime, and then we have two different economically more meaningful regime. Nevertheless, these are our results here. There's not of this model does not work. Here, for example, if you look at the regime one, that's not statistically significant. If the cards process is relevant, both of these terms should be statistically significant. So here, The model one is not working. What about here? In the second regime, the model is working. In the third regime, the model is not working. What about the statistical significance of transitional probabilities? Okay, it's basically zero. It's the model is not working. And then when we look at just these transitional matrices, we find these zero values, and that's a sign that the model is not working. There's no real transition between the regimes, and there should be such. So that model is, so for sure, two regime model is working better than the three regime model. Then this is the end of the exercises. There's some, if you want to look on your own, some additional analysis, doing some simulations, you can look at these codes, but these are not the topic of today's. This is just some additional data, additional code there. So that's all, folks, today. Next week we will have the first eight session for the computer for the home assignment. So that will be same time next week. So have a nice rest of the week and see you up.